Dyscalcemia is kind of a slightly different thing. And diagnostically, it's defined as serum total calcium concentrations less than or equal to 2.2 millimoles per liter or 8.8 milligrams per deciliter at 4 days in milk. So this is at a slightly, you know, it's a very specific time point that we want to measure dyscalcemia. And kind of some key ways that it's different from hypocalcemia would be it's not clinical, right? It's a subclinical situation. So these cows aren't going down. In fact, you're probably not going to notice that these cows have become dyscalcemic unless you measure their blood concentrations of calcium.
Welcome to the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast, the latest dairy health research digested for you. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Steel, ventilation, cow cooling, cow-centric design, engineered in Canada by InBarn Solutions.
Welcome to the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Luciano Cacheta, and I'm your host today on this podcast that's dedicated to bringing the latest insight and discussions in dairy health industry. Please get ready to expand your knowledge and receive, host with me here today, Dr. Jackson Seminara, who finished his PhD at Cornell and now is working on his DVM clinical training. And he will come to share with us more of his knowledge and what his work that he's been doing in dyscalcemia and inflammation.
Welcome to the podcast, Jackson.
Thank you, Luciano.
Yeah, it's nice to see you. Like we were talking before we started this recording, and I've been following your work for a while. We work in a similar area. I don't do as much calcium work, related work like you are doing, but I've done it before, and it's something that's always of my interest. And we both work in that transition period, and cows have a lot of challenges at that point. And gearing to what you do and you have done, and I've been to your PhD defense and many of your presentations in conferences, and you have a lot of work on dyscalcemia and inflammation. Knowing that the cows have this biggest challenge when they calve, so how does dyscalcemia and inflammation fit in that picture?
That's a good question. I think for us, at least the way that we like to think about it, or at least the way that I thought about it during my thesis, was dyscalcemia specifically is a really good indicator that things are going badly for a cow during the transition period. So, you know, obviously we all know that, you know, dairy cows are experiencing various challenges, such as, you know, decreased feed intake is happening during this time. We're having microbial threats to the reproductive tract. We're also trying to produce lots of milk and having various immune changes that are happening. And some cows are able to manage that adaptive balancing act really effectively. And cows that aren't able to manage that, they often will develop dyscalcemia. And so we don't like to think of dyscalcemia as being a cause necessarily of them, you know, failing to adapt, but we do like to think about it as a very good indicator that they have failed already.
Wisenetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access wisenetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Hey, this is good. So I should have actually started one. The question I'm going to ask you now should be the first one, because many people might not be aware of what dyscalcemia is, right? Like, this is something that you have been working, and like the team that you work with coined the term. But some people might still thinking about hypocalcemia. That's like something that was broadly used. Like, so can you like make that differentiation for us? That way we can everybody be on the same footing one way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. So Yeah, well, when we think about hypocalcemia, you know, especially clinical hypocalcemia, this is milk fever, you know, the cow goes down, and if she is not treated with intravenous calcium really quickly, she could die. And that's kind of the hypocalcemia thing that we often talk about, and it's still important. It doesn't happen as frequently as maybe it once did, and that's largely due to, you know, prepartum diet management. But dyscalcemia is kind of a slightly different thing. And diagnostically, it's defined as serum total calcium concentrations less than or equal to 2.2 millimoles per liter or 8.8 milligrams per deciliter at 4 days in milk. So this is at a slightly, you know, it's a very specific time point that we want to measure dyscalcemia. And kind of some key ways that it's different from hypocalcemia would be it's not clinical, right? It's a subclinical situation. So these cows aren't going down. In fact, you're probably not going to notice that these cows have become dyscalcemic unless you measure their blood concentrations of calcium. And really the only way that we know that they were is because of the outcomes that they experience that are, you know, really a lot less optimal than we would hope for these cows. Does that kind of explain the differentiation there?
No, that's good for people to know, because like I said, some people might be still thinking about hypocalcemia, and now we're talking like dyscalcemia, just to make that differentiation. So this is a product of years of work and years of epidemiological data showing like that that's when we should be looking for this, and this is still associated with all those downstream outcomes that we'll talk before, right?
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then you do something that's also, I think it's fascinating in the sense that it's very complicated also to wrap my head around that, is because you do link that with inflammation, which is by its, both those things by itself are complicated. And then you go there and like put them all together. So that makes it even more complicated. So how do you see that balance or that interplay between those two things in the fresh cow?
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to shamelessly plug a paper that we just got in press in JDS, but
no, that's, you should definitely do it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So we just got a paper published where we looked at exactly that and a bunch of other things as well, including feed intake. And the way that we're kind of trying to connect the pieces here is, again, it's not from a causal framework. You know, we're not saying that inflammation causes calcium or calcium causes inflammation or whatever. We're just noticing through, you know, a very intensively sampled cohort that when calcium is dropping, inflammation is also spiking. And in those cows that develop dyscalcemia, we're seeing very elevated inflammatory markers in those cows. And so, you know, I think this could be connecting to a lot of research that's been done using an LPS challenge model where they, you know, they induce very severe inflammation. And when you induce severe inflammation, there is a precipitous drop in blood calcium concentrations almost immediately. And that work really inspired us to kind of see if that's what was happening during the early postpartum period. And again, we can't say whether that inflammation that we've observed is causing the drop in blood calcium, especially because during that early postpartum timeframe, we see that blood calcium concentration is dropping immediately. And it's really the failure to recover blood calcium concentration, which is kind of the key piece, where cows that don't develop inflammation don't develop dyscalcemia, and they recover blood calcium concentrations effectively. And then cows that do develop inflammation, those are also the cows that develop dyscalcemia. And so, you know, in terms of putting the pieces together, we think this is a part of a puzzle that each sort of axis here, whether that be, you know, energy related metabolites and energy metabolism itself, or inflammation or calcium metabolism. We think about those things as all being a part of a maladaptive phenotype that some cows experience and other cows do not.
Right. Like, it's so complicated. And I believe this is there'll be the topic of discussion and topic of research for the years to come, because it's like I said, it's multifactorial. It's super complicated. But let's try to wrap it out. We're coming up in the time here for people listening to us. I fully agree. This is complicated. You're going to probably be working on this for a long time now. But like, if we were to like try to simplify it and for the listeners that they're trying to find, are there any signs that people could be looking for this calcemic cow, or the cows that inflammation, something that you could look for beforehand and help you kind of help the cow?
Okay. So yes, I think there are some things. I think, as inline milk analysis becomes more available, that will definitely be a tool that people can use. But obviously, it's very cost prohibitive in a lot of ways. You know, not every farm can afford to have inline milk analysis. But one thing that we found in that sort of recent paper, and also our group has found this in previous papers, was that rumination times are also declining right around this kind of key 24 hours to 48 hours postpartum. We're seeing a drop in rumination time in cows that go on to develop dyscalcemia. And so if we want to think about, you know, which cows should we be managing, you know, maybe a little bit more intensively and keeping an eye on, you know, maybe it's those cows that are deviating from the herd average with less rumination during that early postpartum timeframe, if that makes sense. And there is some good research by Peter et al. Where they found that very drop in the first few days is associated in and of itself with downstream outcomes that are, bad, like reduced peak milk yield and all of that. And so that early postpartum drop in rumination time, we think that could be a very favorable marker. And obviously not everybody has sensors, but it could be a useful indicator for those that do.
No, that's great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and what you're doing with us. It was great to have you here. I bet we're going to have you here in the future, because you're going to continue to do some like of this cool stuff. And good luck. As I understand, you now that you have your PhD, you're going back and finishing also your DVM. So good luck and have fun getting your clinical training up.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on the podcast. This was really a pleasure.
This concludes another episode of the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast, presented to you by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a message, a review. Having your feedback is very valuable for us and help us like this find and decide what we're going to do and speak to you, bring to you in the future. Until next time. This is the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast. I'm Luciano Cacheta, and thank you for listening to us.